Hello, and welcome to The Staffing Show, the only podcast that delivers tools, tips, and tactics from the staffing and recruiting industry's top executives and thought leaders.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Staffing Referrals. At Staffing Referrals, we understand the challenges your agency faces every day. From finding high-quality candidates and clients to automating your recruitment process, our platform is designed to help you grow your agency faster. Imagine a world where your agency can automatically build your talent community, improve your recruiter's productivity, and automate manual processes, all the while improving the candidate experience. But don't just take our word for it. Here's what a few satisfied customers have to say. Our referral program boomed after partnering with Staffing Referrals. The technology allows us the tracking, communication, and reporting our traditional referral program desperately needed to unify and expand. Can't imagine our business without it. Are you ready to transform your staffing agency? Let's reduce your dependency on job boards. Deliver the experience your candidates expect from a modern business and turn your talent pool into a competitive advantage. Visit staffingreferrals.com and get ready to grow.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of The Staffing Show. Today, I am super excited to be joined by Brian Hoffmeyer, who is the SVP at Beeline. Brian, thanks for being on today. Super excited about our conversation. To kick things off, could you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into the staffing industry?
Glad to, and really glad to be here, David. You know, thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to our conversation. I came at this industry, like I think a lot of people did, kind of by accident. The story I always tell is when I was a little kid, this isn't what I imagined myself doing for the vast majority of our career. And I think that applies to a lot of us. And I actually posted recently on LinkedIn, there's this origin story, like meme or, you know, hashtag, I should say, going around LinkedIn where people post how they got to where they are. And, you know, when I was a little kid, I actually wanted to be an architect. And the defining feature of my houses was that they had a water slide going through them.
Which, I support that.
I actually still really good idea, especially on a hot Colorado day like we're having today. I came at the staffing industry, specifically the VMS industry, kind of by accident about 20 years ago. Was looking for my next step. I was a product manager at the time for a software company that managed IRA and trusts and saw a job at then IQ Navigator as a product manager and applied for that job. And kind of the rest is history. And I've been with the IQ Navigator, now Beeline organization, for 20 years, which again was not what I was expecting, but it's come to really define my career and define a lot of who I am as a person. And I've developed this, what I call an unlikely passion for the importance of what we broadly do in contingent labor, for the importance of helping companies manage this increasingly critical part of the workforce better. And so doing help all of the personas that are involved in it. I think that's one of the really interesting things about contingent labor is you get all these different personas. You know, get the buyer of contingent labor, the staffing supplier, the worker themselves, and the technology and the services, MSPs, VMSs that underpin it all. And it makes the world really fascinating. And I've been very lucky in my career at Beeline, you know, now again, approaching 20 years, to have done a bunch of different jobs that have increased my experience and helped me on my career path. And you know, so even though I've been with the same company for 20 years, I feel like I've had, I don't even know how I count, 10 or 11 different jobs during that time.
That's amazing. And tell us a little bit about who is Beeline, where are you guys kind of, what do you guys do? And then where are you at from like a size and growth perspective as well, if you're open to sharing that?
Yeah, glad to. Beeline is, you know, what is typically known as a vendor management system or VMS. You know, frankly, it's not a term that we love because it doesn't fully describe what we do. Yes, we help clients manage their vendors. But one, we get confused with a lot of other VMSs. If you Google VMS, you know, it's not going to be the first thing that comes up. Virtual machines might be, which is kind of annoying. But it's the name we're stuck with. We tried to change what we were called a couple of years ago. And we will tend to call ourselves an extended workforce platform that tends to fit. But we still answer to VMS. But effectively, we have a variety of tools. We have multiple VMSs we sell now in the market that are all designed to manage the end-to-end process for all types of non-employee labor, whether it's you know, contingent workers of all types, again, ranging from, you know, people working in a warehouse packing orders to, you know, very high-end IT workers, as well as statement of work, independent contractors, all of these different terms, you know, the Beeline a tool can manage all of those processes. We're a software-only company. We provide no services, so we're really managing that process. Our typical client has always been the buyer of contingent labor, the company who is engaging with staffing suppliers to find labor, though that's something that's changing as our product strategy shifts, and we'll be talking about that more today.
And so who are some examples of your guys' customers?
Yeah, sorry.
Are there verticals you specialize in or size of business?
Just from a size perspective, we've got about 400 plus clients. Big portion of our clients are kind of names that you would know, companies in the Global 2000 who are spending historically 25 million or more on contingent labor on an annual basis, all the way up into the billions. We do have a new product that's focused on the middle market, and that's going to focus on smaller, true mid-market companies. But you know, our clients are large organizations. I probably shouldn't name a lot of them. But
yeah, understood.
Most of them are brand names that the folks on this would recognize. We process about $65 billion in annual labor through Beeline, and we really hit on almost every major vertical. You know, from financial services is actually our largest, but consulting, manufacturing of all types, retail, computer services, you know, pharma, life sciences. Maybe the one thing that we don't do because it requires some specialized functionality is true clinical healthcare, the actual clinicians in hospitals, because there's unique functionality that's required for them and there's specialty VMSs there. But in general, VMSs are just that generalist. They can serve across a lot of verticals.
And I mean, you just said you're a generalist. So now I'm going to ask the next part, what makes you guys different?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's three key things. One is that our expertise matters. We've been doing this for 20 years and have served, you know, this, we're lucky to serve this very diverse group of clients who have substantial and complex requirements. Our system is enterprise grade for a reason because our clients have pushed us to do that. And so that expertise has given us an opinion. It's given us breadth and depth of functionality needed to serve these clients. So that's one. Second is what we call unwavering focus. We are an independent software-only provider. We are only focused on one thing, which is providing software to manage the non-employee workforce. We're not trying, you know, we're not part of, as some of our competitors are, part of a large consortium of different software products. That's our one focus, and it's something we are passionate about as a company. And then last is this idea of what we call collaborative innovation. You know, the contingent workforce continues to change and our product strategy changes. And one of the things our product team says all the time is that we view all feedback as a gift. And so we engage not only with our clients, but all of the stakeholders, staffing suppliers, workers, MSPs, to make our product better. And that combined with that expertise and focus is what makes Beeline unique.
I don't know how common this is, but I feel like sometimes I hear a word VMS and we also have an MSP or we're partnered with this MSP. Is that a common, maybe a silly question at this
stage? No, it's not. I think it's a really good question. We partner with MSPs. MSPs are involved in a significant part of our business, about 2/3. And that's a trend that we continue to see. My day job, when I'm not doing podcasts, is I manage all of our partner relationships, and partners in general are very, very strategic to Beeline because of two things. One is the complexity of the non-employee workforce. And two, because of our focus on being just a software provider, we need partners to extend and add to what we do. In so doing, allow us to serve the needs of our clients. And MSPs are a huge part of that. Again, about 2/3 of our business, we work with a wide range of MSPs, you know, across the industry, across the globe, but it's a partnership and they're not part of who we are.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I know you and I had a brief conversation on just how, and I've heard this from quite a few people, that MSPs are playing a bigger role than they have in the past, especially I know in healthcare, I've heard that from a handful of people. But what's your take overall on kind of the...
I think it's true in healthcare, and I think it's true in all verticals as well. What we're seeing is a shifting of what the MSP does. And I think this is common across a lot of different industries where, you know, technology through AI, you know, we probably can't have a conversation without mentioning AI.
Yeah.
You know, advances in automation and things like that are replacing activities that humans used to do manually. And as a result, like, I think one of the fascinating things about humans throughout history is when automation happens, humans evolve and do things that they didn't previously. And believe that's going to happen, you know, in this AI revolution. And we're certainly seeing with our MSP partners where they're shifting from, managing processes to providing strategic advice, consulting on how work should get done on a tactical day-to-day basis, but also on a strategic basis. And, you know, again, buzzwords, but things like total talent management. And when a company is growing and they've got these goals that they're needing to achieve, the MSP is helping guide them. How does that impact their talent strategy? And it's been one of the things that's been, I think, pretty interesting over the last few years, not just seeing the MSPs evolve, but seeing increased HR and talent acquisition involvement in the contingent workforce. You know, if we're having this conversation 5 years ago, not 5 days, 5 years, most of our stakeholders were procurement. HR wanted nothing to do with contingent labor. I mean, I'm speaking in broad terms, the Heisman. And now what we see as a best practice is organizations combining procurement disciplines around vendor management, contract management, with human capital, HR, talent acquisition disciplines around talent. And, you know, as the contingent workforce grows in size and importance, organizations that don't have it as part of their talent strategy, I think, are missing out. Because, you know, if it's 20% of your workforce are not your employees, but they're not part of your planning, like, that's a problem.
So essentially, you're seeing the value add is that if they can take the contingent workforce and include that as their strategic HR planning, they're going to get more out of it. Yeah.
And that's something that I generally pretty passionate about is companies need to think about contingent workforce from a strategic perspective. You know, when they, when you a company, you know, what are your goals regarding your contingent workforce? You also often hear something that is important, but relatively tactical. Like, I want to achieve savings. I want to improve quality.
Like, trying to reduce cost.
Yeah. You know, and that's not unimportant, but I think it's more interesting to say, you know, we as a company are growing into this new market, or we have a whole new product. And in order to do so, we need contingent workers to help us achieve those goals. And so, like, we encourage our customers to tie their contingent workforce into higher level corporate goals, because you certainly tie your talent, your full-time talent, into your corporate goals, and contingent workforce should be no different.
So it sounds like you also mentioned MSPs are helping play that role strategically. Do you think that's why there's more involved, or what's kind of the, and you mentioned the AI component of it as well, that's just kind of shifting the MSP's role. But what do you think the reason for the growth in the MSP segment has been?
I think it's kind of a virtuous cycle driven by all of those things. You know, HR is more involved. MSPs see the need to evolve as the world changes in general, but also in terms of what technology does. They're using technology to enable the things that they're doing as well. And by the way, a lot of what I'm saying extends to staffing suppliers too. We're seeing, you know, them bring automation in to make better decisions and serve their clients better. We're seeing them try to become strategic advisors to their clients as well. And again, like, using that virtuous cycle term, that I think is really important, because it, you know, all boats rise with that tide.
We jumped right into it, but talking about some of the trends and shifts that are happening in the staffing industry. And one of those that you had brought up, and something that I've seen quite a few of our customers actually have talked to, have pushed heavier into the statement of work kind of path. And that's something that you brought up as a trend that you're seeing as well. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what that means and what you're experiencing from your perspective.
We're definitely seeing that. You know, we've been talking about statement of work for a number of years, and I think various people, pundits, if you will, maybe myself included, has proclaimed a particular year as the year of statement of work. And not all of those predictions, as predictions are wont to do, have come to be. I think we're seeing just an increased emphasis on it. One is that at most organizations, statement of work spend dwarfs traditional contingent labor spend, you know, at least 2x, but in certain organizations, it could be 6x. And, you know, we're talking about statement of work across a wide variety of different categories, certainly IT, both development work and, you know, wholesale outsourcing, but marketing and finance. And then, you know, depending on what industry, like, I was talking to a client in the energy, you know, a public utility industry today, they do big statement of work around things like vegetation management on rights of way to clear vegetation away from power lines. But it's a statement of work because it's services being performed by people. And so there's all these variations in it. And so what clients realize that they need to get a handle on it for the same reason they do on traditional contingent labor, to get ultimately to get visibility and better decision-making based on that visibility, because now they've got the data and they can measure it. I think from a staffing supplier perspective, you know, they realize it's an opportunity to provide services that aren't as commoditized. You know, if you're just competing your project manager against somebody else's project manager, it's like, it's hard to differentiate. But if you can show a company that you can deliver an outsourced service better, faster, cheaper through a methodology you've developed, I think it sets you apart from your competition. And so I think both sides are pushing at this to cause it to grow. And then the other thing we often see is that when a VMS and an MSP, if there's one involved, comes in and puts controls around certain parts of the process, you know, it's that classic squeezing of the balloon that it's going to pop out somewhere else. And all of a sudden statement of work spend goes up. Well, then you have to really look at it and say, are these truly statements of work that are being created, or is it contingent that's now hiding? And, you know, our clients look to us to help them get control over all of that.
Yeah. And so it sounds like from the staffing agency perspective, one of the benefits is differentiated services. Obviously, if you're solving the problem from a more meaningful perspective, you actually own the outcomes. I always think about that, though. It has to be a challenge from going, hey, our problem that we're solving is getting you the person to solve the problem versus we now own the problem. It feels like a very different approach to work. What are some of the challenges that you hear about from agencies going down that path?
I mean, I think some of it is at times they're trying just to wrap contingent where they're not truly taking on responsibility in an SOW wrapper and still trying to do it on a time and materials basis. And to me, if it's a statement of work, the trade-off between the buyer and the supplier is the shifting of that risk. Yep. And so it's an opportunity to make more money, but it's also, you've got to have the right processes, the people in place, the infrastructure. You know, if somebody is outsourcing development to you, you sure as hell better understand what you're being asked to develop and what are the resources you need to do that in a way that's going to tie into what that company is trying to achieve from a business perspective.
I had not heard of it being the year of statement of work. Actually, more people in the finance and accounting segment this year that have had a lot of success shifting into that kind of approach to contingent labor and also to more of a strategic solution-oriented partnership. What are some of the other trends that, from your perspective, where you said talking to all of the suppliers that you guys work with and what are some of the other things you see going on?
I think, in general, across our client base, and as I mentioned, you know, we've got a significant amount of spend running through our system. We're seeing week over week increases in kind of what I'd call same store spend when we normalize for growth and new clients and things like that. We're seeing this gradual increase in spend week over week. We're still down year over year, as is, I think, both everyone, right? And, you know, we track, for example, pretty closely to the Bullhorn SIA staffing index.
Yeah, I was wondering, that's what I check that every Tuesday now.
You know, so we're not back to where we were in 2023, but the increase seems to be steepening in its trajectory, which is a good thing. Because when it first started, I would call it imperceptible to the human eye in terms of right? You can now see it. But we still have about half of our clients are spending more and half of our clients are spending less. But we think we'll continue to see a recovery. It will be interesting to see, you know, the impact of, you know, socioeconomic things, the political climate. Though I was talking to an MSP partner and they did an analysis, and over the last 12 years, they've seen no impact based on kind of the party that is in office on contingent labor spend. There's no correlation that they can find, which kind of surprised me, but I thought it was interesting. So I think we'll continue to see it to go up. One of the things you and I were talking about, though, is that there's this kind of COVID hangover where, you know, spending across so many verticals, like, I mean, especially healthcare, skyrocketed during COVID, and that reset the baseline probably artificially high. And I think we need to adjust the baseline down to be like, maybe in a lot of ways, we should just take 20 and 2021 out of history. I mean, happened, and like, just look at normalized growth from 2019 and as the new baseline. But I also think that's created some reticence in clients to spend on contingent labor, you know, because we hear a lot about unemployment being so low, but I think that's not accounting for the folks that have just left the workforce. And, you know, people are like, well, why is it contingent? Kind of, it's always been a leading indicator of growth. Why isn't it growing faster? And I think companies are just nervous right now.
You know, kind of just locked up with the interest rates. And everybody says an election year. I don't know. I would love to know if there's actual correlation with things pausing on election years, but it feels like that's the common byline.
It feels right anyway.
Yeah, it feels right for sure.
Though, I think the other thing I would say is that, you know, we saw so many large, you know, tech firms have massive layoffs, you know, in technology. And a lot of those permanent people, I think, got jobs very quickly, but they got jobs at smaller firms. And I think, you know, especially really small firms tend to use less contract labor. And so I state that because so much of contingent labor has historically been in technology and IT. So there's some correction going on there, I think.
Yeah. It's definitely been interesting times. I feel like talking to people outside of staffing, like the economy is doing amazing. And things are great. And in staffing, there's the last, I guess, 18 months have been a little bit challenging for some, with, you know, some verticals outperforming others. One of the other areas that I know you and I had talked about briefly was just kind of the critical balance of cost, quality, and speed. And love if you could just kind of share a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, I love this topic because, you know, kind of to the point of savings being tactical, I think it is. I'm not, again, discounting the importance of saving money, but like if you save $5 an hour on a person and they're not good at their job and they take twice as long to do it, you haven't really saved money.
Yeah.
So I think it's smart for everybody in the industry, you know, staffing suppliers should be talking about this. We have tools that give clients, you know, different levers they can pull where we show that intersection of cost, quality, and speed. And so, you know, if you spend $5 less, quality may go down, or it takes 2 weeks longer to find the person. Well, okay, that's fine. Or you can say, you know what, this is a critical project to my business. I'm going to spend $10 more an hour, and I find the person in 5 days and they can get working. And so having that kind of visibility is really important. I think ultimately that's what our clients really care about.
And how are you seeing clients measure that? Are they able to do that through, and this again might be a question that others know, but is that something that you can see and track within the VMS? What are ways
to kind of shift? Not only can we see and track it in terms of, you know, analytics looking backwards, what we're trying to do is use tools to help create a better requisition from the onset that creates a better outcome for everybody. So we say to a hiring manager, you know, hey, David, it looks like you're hiring a project manager again. You did this last year. And when you did that, you added these additional job skills to the base requisition, to the base job description, because that's what you mean by project manager. So let's do that again so you get a better outcome. Or another example of that would be like you're in Denver, but if you hired somebody in Des Moines, Iowa — I always use Des Moines for some reason, I have no ties you could save $10 an hour and find this person quicker. So maybe you should expand the scope, the geographic scope you're looking at. And so it's trying to provide those tools to create better outcomes from the start versus just analyzing in a rearview mirror.
Oh, that's great. Are you guys looking at — and this is something that's near and dear to me and something that I've been digging into more — is looking at, we're calling it candidate lifetime value, same concept as customer lifetime value, but looking at from a perspective of a candidate and then simply just where were they sourced? Was this a source from Indeed? Was it from Vivian? Was it from a referral? And we're seeing fairly significant differences on where you found the person in terms of how — now that's not going to necessarily mean quality, but time on contract does probably hopefully correlate with quality.
Yeah, I'd probably look at that a little differently, but I think it's the other side of the same coin is things like, you know, reusing the same person, right?
Yeah.
Somebody's come into your business and they spend the first 2 weeks getting on board and understanding your development environment. Well, why not redeploy that person?
Exactly.
Rather than find somebody all new. And so I think, you know, we again try to provide tools to help drive redeployment, but I think it's, you know, MSPs should help do more of this. Staffing suppliers should be, you know, suggesting that, hey, you know, David's coming up on 2 weeks to go in his assignment. He's done a great job. Let's find another job for him. And that's beneficial to everyone.
One of the other areas that I know you and I had touched on a little bit is just, you brought this up earlier, is like saying the VMS is not always what you guys would necessarily say is the ideal word or terminology, but how have things changed? How's the opinion of VMS changed over the last few years?
I think it's become less of a four-letter word historically, and we still see this a little too much. I was at a conference in at the end of March and doing a panel where some of these old adages can, you know, sort of continue to come up, where, you know, like the VMS is stopping me from talking to the hiring managers, you know, they're making it so it's hard for me to compete, et cetera. And first and foremost, the VMS is just a software tool. So like, if that's happening, it's because somebody else has put in a process using the VMS, whether it's, you know, an MSP, though these more and more MSPs don't do this either, or, you know, the client, if they're managing their own program, or even in some cases, the MSP is forced to do something by the client where they limit manager contact. And to me, like, that's an area where the industry continues to need to evolve, be based on, we shouldn't be punishing everybody for the bad behavior of a few 20 years ago kind of thing. You know, the perception of VMS as a blocker has changed. And when we talk to suppliers, you know, we're trying to make their lives easier. And this is where our product strategy has shifted. You know, historically, Beeline, and I think all VMSs, has really focused on the end buyer as the customer, as the persona. And we looked at ourselves a couple of years ago and said, we need to change this. And so now we're talking a lot about triangles today, but, you know, again, you've got the buyer, the staffing supplier, and the worker at three corners of the triangle. And then there's an MSP that sort of overlays or underlays the entire thing. We want all of those users to have great experiences using Beeline. And, you know, specifically when it comes to staffing suppliers, we've heard two things when we talk to them. One is they ask, how can you help us win more business? And then once we win that business, how can you help us operate with more automation and efficiency? And we've got products and user experiences that are directly designed to do both of those things. Again, we're a software provider, so we're not in the business of saying to our clients, these are the three suppliers that you should use, but we want to create tools that create that connection. And we have those available now. And then from an automation and efficiency perspective, we're doing a lot around consolidating data, APIs, to make the data flow automatically between our system and external systems, you know, the ATS or what have you the supplier uses, so that the supplier then concentrates on filling the requisition with the right person rather than manual data entry, which is prone to errors and delays.
With that, I know you kind of touched on this a little bit. One of the things I'd heard just over the years being in healthcare staffing is, you know, VMS came in a major way, and it was like, well, it's taking away the human connection, it's taking away my relationship in some instances, which you're saying, you know, it's not necessarily true. But it sounds like there's actually potentially opportunity for VMS to also help you identify new clients. And I know that's an area where staffing firms as a whole right now, it's been the number one challenge for, I haven't seen the most recent SIA Pulse report, but they've been sitting in the spot where finding new clients has been harder than finding new candidates for a while. That's something that, explain how that works and how, you know, what are some of the top agencies doing to actually find new hiring managers and new job orders?
Yep. So for us, we've put up a public directory on Beeline.com, and I'm not trying to make this a Beeline advertisement at all, but, you know, effectively a robust search engine that helps buyers of contingent labor, whether it's a Beeline client or, you know, somebody that happens on our website that uses another VMS, you know, find staffing suppliers. And, you know, the other side of this trend, you know, like I said, our staffing supplier partners are saying, how can you help us find new business? Our clients are coming to us and saying the exact same thing. How can you help us find new suppliers? I have this need for project managers in Des Moines, Iowa, and how do I find new sources of supply for that? And we're seeing that from our existing client base. We're seeing that from our MSP partners because we have so much data, and we're seeing it when we're talking to new potential clients. They're at, you know, like, that's a common RFP question for us now. And so that we've responded to that with this directory that helps make that connection. And glad to talk to anybody who's listening, you know, more about that, you know, offline. I think from a staffing supplier perspective, it's, again, this is such one-on-one stuff, but it's showing truly how you're different. And, you know, when you are selling your services to a client, really understanding their business at a deep level, what are they trying to achieve in their business, not just with their contingent workforce, in their business, and how you are uniquely focused, you know, and able to meet that needs, and what are the tools you can use to do that?
I know you've been in sales for years, so obviously differentiating the service is good advice. I'm wondering if, knowing that that's one of the top challenges, if there's any other pieces of advice or things that you see working well on the sales front, or even if it's just kind of personal advice, be like, hey, if I was CEO of a staffing agency, here's what I would be telling my team that they should be focused on to make sure they're winning new business. I'll put you on the spot.
No, it's a great question. It's really just comes down to like a lot of business basics. You hear these stories of kind of bad behavior of cold form emails that are sent. I get probably one a day from somebody like, hey, can we provide you know, staffing to Beeline directly. And they're so generic and like they literally just go right in the bin. They're not catching attention. They come across as an annoyance. And so you've got to get above that. You've got to show, I understand your business. Here is how I've helped a client that looks like you, even if I've not worked directly with you. And here's why I'm confident that I can meet your needs. And so, you know, kind of the more you know, the better. And, you know, use the tools that are available. And like, you know, for example, if there's an MSP involved at the client you're selling to, you better know that, because, you know, trying to get around them is not going to end well. The client's going to immediately send you to them, and it's going to kind of create a demerit on your report card to start with. So like, if there's an MSP, like build the relationship with the MSP to try to get in there. And again, show them how you can not only help them look better, but how you can serve their ultimate end client. So I feel like it's pretty basic stuff, but it probably just bears repeating. Because
I think it's worth repeating. And also, I feel like the part of the COVID hangover is everybody realizing they have to go back to the basics. I feel like I've heard that from so many executives on this podcast, whether it's on the, not just the sales front, but on the recruiting side of like, we need to get back to pick up the phone and call. You got to, you know, do the things that got us here before we had the COVID, I guess, not bust, the COVID boom.
I mean, despite what we've talked about a lot about technology, like when I always say this, when people come into Beeline from outside, from some other industry, it's like, yes, we're a technology business, but never forget we're in the people business. And like, you know, that the people connection and relationships is incredibly important.
Absolutely. And with that, we're going to go ahead and jump into the speed round of questions. So we've got a couple left for you.
I love it.
Advice do you wish you were given before entering the staffing industry?
The advice I would give myself looking back, because I kind of was thrust in without having the right context. You know, and I was, as I said, I started as a product manager. And so I immediately started kind of developing product without understanding the larger context of who all the players were. And so it's like really understanding this very unique ecosystem and what makes it different than any other market. You know, every business market is unique and unto itself, but really understanding the intricacies of all of the players, all the different ways that contingent workforces use, how, you know, buyers, staffing suppliers, workers, and MSPs all work together is incredibly important for somebody that's trying to enter it. I learned that all that stuff over a longer period of time than I should have.
Jump in and learn quickly so you don't have to do a drip campaign over time on it. In the last 5 years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
Oh boy. My wife is an executive coach and leadership development person. She works in the industry, and you know, she's the most, her innate ability to understand people and conflict and how to, and so one of the things she's taught me is this concept of both and really, you know, looking at two things can be true, things that seem diametrically opposed, these dichotomies exist, and trying to look at things from both perspectives is super important. You know, in our relationship, we have this like sort of like code word where if I've had a rough day or whatever, and I just need to complain about something, I need to tell her like, hey, I just need to complain for a second. I don't need you to tell me what I did wrong or how I should be looking at the other person's perspective. Just let me vent. And then I'll probably come around and say, okay, now tell me how else I should be thinking about this. And so I try to like, again, it seems so obvious, but stopping and thinking about that other person's perspective and being mindful about that is really important to me.
And what book or books have you given most as a gift or have been most influential to you?
And I don't tend to give books as gifts all that much. I love cooking. I have a pig tattooed on my arm. Love. And so this doesn't relate at all to the industry, but like for me, work and life so intertwined, inseparable, that connecting to people through cooking is often how I connect to people at work. And so like, I love to share things about cooking with those that I work with. And I tell a story like often when I'm presenting on stage that asks the question, is a taco a sandwich or not? So it's not exactly a book, but it drives connection because everybody tends to love food.
Did you say you tell a story that there is a taco?
I believe a taco is a sandwich. And
I was like, well, we need to hear the story. You can't end on fake it.
It's very nerdy. There's a theory.
Let's go.
there's something called the unified sandwich theory that 9 boxes ingredient purity and structural purity across the two. So obviously, like no one's going to argue that a piece of meat and a piece of cheese between bread is a sandwich. So that's top left, like that's a sandwich. But then bottom right is a Pop-Tart a sandwich, right? Because it's two pieces of starch with something sandwiched in between, kind of thing. And so a taco is just a starch folded around a filling. And so you could argue that it's a sandwich. And I happen to love tacos. And actually, just recently, a judge in, I think, Indiana, on some obscure zoning thing about a restaurant, ultimately ruled that tacos were in fact sandwiches for the purposes of zoning. So now there's legal precedent to state that.
I was just asking ChatGPT, is a taco a sandwich?
What is that?
Yeah. That's something I've not ever thought about that. And that's great. A great way to finalize things here. Any closing comments for the audience today?
No, I mean, just thank you for having me. It's important to me personally that we all work together to elevate this really important industry. So feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. Glad to have conversations. You know, if you're at an upcoming conference, glad to talk in person about how we can work together to help each other. You know, that those connections, you know, managing Beeline's partnerships is what gets me up every day. And so doing things to drive those forward is important. So glad to have any further conversations with anybody that listens to this.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining, Brian. I really enjoyed the conversation and have a great day.
You as well. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to The Staffing Show. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at staffinghub.com to never miss an episode. Until next time.